TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken
record. Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 136, and I'm Libya, your host, and this week we have returning guests.
Hi, I'm Tom from Glendale.
And Allison from Tarzana.
And this week in the news, in case you guys haven't heard, Partners has been canceled, Park Avenue 666, and Last Resort have all been canceled.
Boo.
Well, boo for Last Resort.
Yeah, Last Resort's the only one I care about on that list, but... I just like that show is really good, and that's the one thing that always gets me is when they cancel really good shows.
And I like how they're starting to tie in things and provide answers to questions from earlier. But I don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
Yes, we'll get to it in the podcast. But that's the one that breaks my heart.
And for those of you who care about such things, American Horror Story has been picked up for a third season of miniseries.
Yay! Yeah.
So I guess
there was much rejoicing.
Yes, I don't watch it.
That was for you, Allison.
Thank you.
All right, let's start off. Let's talk about Homeland. And this week was... Oh, they surprised me a lot. Like, they actually resolved the whole hit-and-run kid thing. Like,
is that resolved?
Well, it's semi-resolved. Like,
it's not basically resolved at all.
When I say resolved... The kids don't have it a secret, and oh my god, you can't tell my dad, like that part that was boring and annoying.
I think it's going to play as a wedge issue between
probably.
It gives Brody a further reason not to like the Veep.
As if he needed something.
Yeah, as if he needed something else.
But I think it mainly makes his daughter kind of, you know, a wild card here because she keeps wanting to confess to the police. And she's been prevented from doing that for obvious reasons. So I think that, you know, her need to be all moral is going to play into this.
Well, not only that, but she's seen Carrie.
Right. Now
and so she's going to narc out. Well, she doesn't know that dad lied to mom
But she does know that her dad slept with Carrie. I think she knows that.
Well, no, but I think, yeah.
So I think that she would tell her mom. So that's a problem.
I think she'd tell her mom that, you know, creepy, crazy CIA lady is
back.
Which, yeah. He just lies with such facility.
It's amazing. I mean, it's simply stunning how well he lies.
Go ahead.
No, I'm saying it's just, you know, so endemic to his character that he is a pathological liar and an easy liar. I mean, there's truly no difference between fiction and the truth for him at all.
I don't understand how he keeps it straight in his head.
That's the thing. You know, when you're a liar, you have to remember a lot. So he clearly has got a lot down to remember. But it's just the facility he has with doing it. You can never trust anything that comes out of his mouth.
What was hilarious to me, though, I know normally the show isn't hilarious, but I had just seen the SNL sketch for Homeland, and what was really, really funny was there's a scene when they do the skit where the daughter is just like Brody and Carrie are having a conversation, and the daughter's like walking in the background going, "Dad, Dad," and it's hilarious on SNL. But then that actually happened in the episode, and I was like, oh my god.
It's just like the SNL sketch.
So who's writing this show?
I know, that was pretty good. Like, I actually thought that was pretty funny.
At this point, this is a show where I really have no idea where they're going, so I just like to sit back and enjoy the ride. Because is Carrie going to self-destruct? Is she going to fall, are she and Brody going to fall in bed again?
I'm going to predict yes.
It looks like they're heading that way.
Yeah.
And
I would
just
not bet against you there.
No,
yeah.
No.
Which is smart. But, and the kid, it's interesting because you don't like the kid at first and you start to like him and now you kind of don't like him again. But
which kid?
The Veep
son.
Boyfriend
dies.
The
Veep son. It's just like I think part of the problem is he knew that, yeah, it's not going to solve anything.
Right.
Because, yeah, I'm the Veep's kid, and I know who my dad is, and I know he'll never let this see the light of day.
Right.
And will go to extraordinary lengths But
hopefully we don't see him again, because I get a feeling they sent him off somewhere. So
you think they sent him out, you know, like to boarding school or whatever?
Yeah, I think they sent him away.
Conveniently, I would not be surprised.
Yeah, they told him to get his stuff and go. No, go ahead.
No, the part of the episode that I thought was the most fascinating, though, was the parts that involved Saul when he was going to interrogate that girl.
Right.
That was a trip.
Before.
Yeah.
And again, you know, you're talking about how this show just is constantly surprising and takes you in places that you were not expecting. I was not expecting that. And the play out of this, you know, of how she basically played Saul, who's hard to play.
Yeah.
And his reaction to it was stunning.
Well, I mean, who's going to assume that somebody's endgame is suicide? So, you know, he was prepared for other kinds of endgames. He was not prepared for this.
Sure.
Yep. And by the time he figured out, it was too late.
Yeah.
But no, it was a good episode.
Thumbs up.
Definitely.
I don't think we've ever thumbed down Homeland.
No.
Okay. No. Next up, we're going to talk about Once Upon a Time. And I don't remember what happened exactly.
Yeah, my problem
was their werewolf episode.
The werewolf thing.
It was the bad episode.
It's the
whole every other episode is kind of mediocre.
Except for it seems like they're starting to get too mediocre.
I thought was kind of bad. Like this was one of the ones where I like Red as a side character who interacts with the main character.
But putting her in spotlight was a bad idea.
She's not strong enough.
And
she's
it was so freaking obvious that Alan Dale, who's like the baddie, the go-to baddie of the week,
right,
or the series, or a series arc, it was so obvious that he was up to no good and had plotted the whole thing.
Well, the thing that makes me mad is Alan Dale's a really good actor.
He is a really good actor.
Except that this character he's playing is very two-dimensional.
Yes, that's the
problem. He's got nothing to do except, you know, kind of go mwahaha and kiss his mustache.
Like that old saying, you can't stir butter with a toothpick. Or churn butter with a toothpick.
There is a sink.
Yes,
I never heard that.
You haven't heard that?
No.
Yes, but you can only do so much with lackluster material. The only thing I thought was remotely interesting was Henry's dreams. And again,
oh right, that was pretty good because that looks
that
like it's
I
going
think
somewhere.
Will go somewhere interesting. Yeah. I'm hoping it will anyway.
But man, whoever told them, hey, let's add in all these characters and then we can give some of our prime actors more time off. It's like, that's a good way to really kill a series.
Yeah, I'm kind of, because Red being a main character, I'm not interested in that at all.
Mm-mm.
So,
was there any goal in this episode?
I don't know. No. I was just bored.
That's... Oh yes, there was. He came in and gave Henry the little
necklace.
Oh,
that's right.
Yeah,
charm.
One scene
to control the dreams. Right.
Yeah,
one scene.
Yeah, gold is gold. Gold is who you want in every episode doing stuff, and he's awesome.
Gold is pure gold.
So having him on the sidelines is a bad idea. All right. This was a thumbs down, I think, from everybody.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, let's talk about Walking Dead.
Woo!
And I have to say, man, this episode was gross.
This
episode was so just bloody and so just like,
And I watched The Talking Dead, where they deconstruct the episode with often crew members of... And so they explained that basically the bloated belly zombie.
It had eaten her.
Okay,
I figured that out.
Some people were confused because they're like,
really?
"Well, I didn't see Lori." It's like, "No, dude, she's dead."
Yeah, I saw the because there was a trail of
there
blood.
There was a trail of
and then the bullet that we know that the kid shot into her body was on the ground.
Yep.
And he's got a puke, and that's why Rick was going to cut his stomach open. I was like, "Please don't do that." I was just like, I once I saw him pull that knife out and I realized what he was going to do, I was like, fast forward, stop, just go.
An example of how to, it shows me that some people watch the show aren't paying attention, which I want to smack them.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we didn't see a body for Lori, it's like, dude, she is so dead.
You didn't see a body for Lori for a reason. I mean, I can't understand that anyone would not get that, because the second I saw the blood on the ground,
mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, you're not going to go there. Oh, you did.
It was so gross.
And it was interesting, the question that they ask a question of the audience every week on Talking Dead, and it went back to what Glenn was saying to Herschel, should we have just killed all the prisoners on site? And surprisingly, by a two-thirds majority, people said no.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have thought they would have said yes.
I would have thought they would be more bloodthirsty, but they weren't. And like Herschel was saying, that really does not separate us from these people.
If we become that cold, because then you're the governor. Governor would have killed the president.
The governor.
What the scene with him combing
and his little darling,
combing zombie daughter's hair and taking a patch of flesh and hair out. That was just
and then he
wrong.
Was trying to calm her down like she was sentient.
Yeah. and puts a hood over her head.
I think he wants to believe that there's some part of her that is. That's why he's keeping her around.
I understand it boggles my mind.
Which is reminiscent of what Herschel thought about the people in the bar.
Right. And I get it, but it's really disturbing and really just like, ew.
But this is the show that puts the D in disturbing.
Though the most awesome scene was Michonne killing all those walkers. That was fantastic.
We finally get to see Michonne being Michonne.
Yeah, she was awesome. And what was great was she leaves. She finally leaves. And then you have Lori thinking she stayed and she dodged a bullet. And then they're having their party. I'm putting that in parentheses, party.
Air quotes.
Yeah. Fun and games.
Yeah. And she's like, holy crap, what have I gotten myself into? And you could tell her thinking, I totally should have left with Michonne.
But I'm wondering, Lori's always been a bit of a wild card.
Not Lori, Andrea.
Andrea's always been a bit of a wild card.
Yeah. She does not look like that's cool. She's like, I need to be gone from this place.
She has not morally lost her way like that.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that's going to eventually get her to leave.
It's just good
or try
to
fun. Anyway.
Yeah. She's like, yeah, no. And forcing her to stay was a bad... I mean, her objection, what the governor should have done is let her sit with her objection and let her go. But he was like, no, you have to stay and sit through this. And I'm like, yeah, that's not a way to get her to be convinced, but...
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
Obviously, the thing with the possum.
The possum.
When they go shopping.
Dinner.
Dinner. I was just wondering, have we seen... It looks like only humans are.
No, we saw a zombie horse before.
That's right.
Yeah.
So. And remember, they were shooting at a deer in the woods when they ended up at the farm.
Right.
Yeah. Well, but that one wasn't a zombie deer.
Yeah. That's how Carl got shot.
Right. All right. So we're gonna say thumbs up, Walking Dead.
Woo.
Yep.
All right. Next up, I'm Talk Revolution, even though my Revolution talking partner is not here. But this week's episode is the penultimate. It's leading up to their fall. They're calling them fall finales now. Whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
This episode was really good because it does the flashback again. So it's another show that uses flashback, but this one it does it to good effect. Like, this is one of the few shows that does a really good job with their flashbacks, because you have the 15-year gap between when the lights went out to find out what people were like before the lights went out. So this time we learn about, I forgot her name, she is the Hispanic woman, and I don't remember her name, but we find out about her and her sister, because the whole plot is she has to rescue her sister, and we find out the whole relationship, and it's a really good flashback. But on the other side, the great thing is Giancarlo Esposito, at back of the Monroe camp, his son gets arrested for treason, and... they basically say, you know, because I like you, or Monroe tells him, because I like you, I'm not going to kill him outright, but we're going to send him to California, which is basically, he might not make the trip, and basically you're never going to see your son again. You know, like, once he goes to California, it's just never going to happen. You're not going to see him again. So it was interesting watching him and his wife plot to bring down another general and to expose that general's son for doing something worse than their son, so that they could get their son back. And just watching them plot together, it was pretty awesome. Like, his story was great. And then his wife starts whispering in his ear, we took down this general, we can take down Monroe. So she's putting thoughts in his head of a complete coup, which I'm cheering, because the guy playing Monroe, he's okay. He's an okay actor, but Giancarlo Esposito being in charge would be awesome. So, yeah. And the preview for next week looks great. They finally, all the parties are finally all going to meet up together, and looks fantastic. So, yes, watch Revolution. Yay! That was me pretending to be a choir of more people. All right. Next up, let's talk about Vegas.
I think the key to Vegas continuing to pique my interest, you got to get Quaid and Chiklis
in the same room.
In the same room.
And they've been doing that.
They've been doing that. So I will give them props for that. But because the case of the week, the procedure.
Actually,
case of the
this weeks, one was actually pretty
it was,
good.
Well, because it was tied in to the Vegas plot,
right.
And so seeing them having to begrudgingly work together. But and yeah, whatever was going on with Quaid's voice seems to have been mostly fixed because he's not talking like he just gargled rocks anymore, which is a good thing. So. No, it was a good episode. It was interesting. The political campaign, it looked like they were going to do a complete riff on the Nixon-Kennedy debates with, I don't want any makeup with the mayor not refusing to use makeup. And
right.
The dude from Ally McBeal, who's like getting old, Gil Bellows, playing his, good-looking, the women swoon-worthy.
I'm not sure. I don't know about that. He wasn't really swoon-worthy.
Well, the women were swooning over him because he's not the other dude who's bald.
Well, the other,
But I thought they were going to do the whole thing with he doesn't look as good. And then, no, they do one further. They have them cut the transmission lines.
Right. Well, what was great is they let their guy give his opening speech.
Uh-huh.
And then they cut the transmission line before
the
Americans could talk. And they were like, well, he was doing really good. He was like, yeah, why take the chance? That was fantastic. Michael Chiklis is rocking this role. He really is.
And I think he really enjoys playing, a meaty bad guy. I just can't wait till he kind of, the blonde, like his chief.
His wife? Oh, no.
No, not his wife. No, his wife's, I think
she's getting boring now, but.
Yeah, they got to do something with her to make her more interesting. But the blonde who's working for him that.
Right.
Has been kind of flirting with
the police chief's son,
his
brother,
with Quaid's brother,
right.
But also has been kind of flirting with. You can tell that there's something going on with her and Chiklis.
Yes.
So it'd be interesting if they had that more as a fully fledged triangle.
Well, it's going to be hard to make the triangle with his wife there.
Yeah, but hopefully they'll figure out how to get her out of the picture because she's boring. And for heaven's sake, do something with Carrie Ann Moss.
She has a romance with Dennis Quaid.
Yeah, but that's been moving glacially.
That's true.
And it's like, I don't know. The son, I'm still not overly
fond. Well, the thing is, what they have is Carrie Ann Moss is now scoping out the wife, Chiklis' wife.
Right.
And she's doing like some sort of covert spy thing with her. So, except that looks boring.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but
still,
yeah.
The story this week was pretty good, though.
Yeah. And it looks like next week's, or the next, whenever the next new episode is also going to be with more of the two of them interacting.
I think that's a good call.
That's the key.
Good call. All right. Thumbs up for Vegas this week. Next up is American Horror Story. And tell us, Allison, why you're so excited.
This week was the second of a two-parter, and we missed talking about the first part. It's called I Am Anne Frank, and introduces a character to the asylum, this woman who swears up and down and seems very convincingly to be Anne Frank, who is also convinced that Arden, the doctor who's in charge of the asylum, is a Nazi war criminal. And she is spreading this around, and apparently what happened in the first part is that she turns out to be absolutely right as far as being a Nazi war criminal.
Okay.
Furthermore, the Monsignor seems to have known about this.
Ooh.
And actually warns him. So much for the Monsignor being a good guy. And in this week's episode, we found out that, well, she was right about her assumptions, but she's not actually Anne Frank. It turns out that she's a woman who suffers from postpartum depression and had a schizophrenic break and believes that she's Anne Frank in the wake of having a baby and just melting down. And her husband comes looking for her. And this gets them to try to reunite her with her husband and bring her home. And the main part of the episode, even though this is all interesting and everything, and it ends up with the probably one of the most horrifyingly graphic frontal lobotomies I've seen done. it's really, it's monstrous.
All right, cool. I was like, is that
typically of American Horror Story? But the main thing of the episode was that they finally revealed who Bloody Face is.
Boom, boom, boom.
Dun, dun, dun. And for those who haven't seen it yet and don't want a spoiler, I'm going to give you fair warning, spoiler coming up. It is Zachary Quinto's character who's been playing the sweet, lovable, caring psychiatrist who's come to the asylum, who seems all modern and lovely. And of course, that's just a facade, and he's really a scary serial killer. And
of course
he manages.
He is. Isn't he always a serial killer?
He's always. I mean, you look at it. That's the thing. It's like, well, of course, first of all, in this show, anyone who seems to be too good, you know, is going to be. So, you know, you're suspicious about him already, just as the character. And then he's played by Zachary Quinto. So it's like, of course. So in that sense, it's really no big surprise. But they still handle it really well. And the character who he's been playing up to all this time, he betrays a number of characters, but the worst one is the lesbian writer who came and got committed against her will to the asylum, and he tells her he's going to help her escape. And what he does instead, he has her escape from the asylum.
And then immediately kills her.
And well, he doesn't actually kill her, but he's got her imprisoned in a basement area of his home.
Where he will kill her, okay.
Presumably at some point, although he's talking right now about how he wants her to write his story, so who knows how long this is going to take.
It's going to be misery.
He did kill her girlfriend, and her body is down in the basement, except for her face, which he's wearing, which is disturbing also. But, you know, typical American Horror Story.
All right, so you're going to say thumbs up?
I would say thumbs up, yeah, definitely.
Okay. Next up, let's talk about Supernatural. And
hallelujah, we got a great episode finally.
This is the first time I've rewatched an episode of Supernatural in
all
probably
season.
A couple of years, actually.
Well, it's a Cass episode, so you know it's going to be good, if only for that reason.
And he's back for a while, too.
Yeah, it looks like I'm very happy. And they had the resolution I've been waiting for forever.
Which
between Dean and Cass. Like, I've been
waiting. Oh, what happened?
I've been waiting for them to have a conversation.
To have it out.
To basically have a conversation. And of course, like, Sam decides to, like, hey, how you guys doing? I'm like, really? Shut up. Go away. They're having their moment right now. So
to wonder how Jared Padalecki feels about his character being so, A, annoying, B, extraneous, C. I mean, he's the top banana on the show, and man,
not
they have
really.
Not...
How's he the top? His
he's the number one star on the show. It's Jared Padalecki, then Jensen Ackles.
Seriously?
I know, but it hasn't been that way. I know that that's how they originally did it, like in season one, but it hasn't been that way for a really long time.
Yeah, but he's just been really. I think the whole thing when Dean came back and Sam basically totally didn't feel bad about not looking for him.
Right.
He's just, I really, really kind of hate him this year. and he's not possessed.
Right, right.
Well, I hate him for his flashbacks. That's
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Don't even get me started.
Let's
talk about the goodness.
There were
flashbacks. There were purgatory flashbacks.
Yeah,
but there were none of those lame whatever's going on with the woman we don't care about flashbacks.
Right.
But no, the flashbacks were great in terms of we finally got to see what happened in context, because they made it sound like Dean had failed or had betrayed Castiel.
Right.
And we finally found out that he hadn't.
Well, because in his mind, he had.
Right, right.
Right. So
but
that's
Castiel
why...
basically had to say, dude, you can't save me. That's not your job.
Right.
It's like, I mean, he basically had to pull rank. It's like, I'm an angel. You're not.
Well, the thing is his
you
whole...
would not have been able to save me. You needed to get out.
But the thing is, his whole life, everybody has been telling him that other people's fates are his responsibility.
Yeah.
And so he's put that weight on himself for so long. And so he's got like all these times where he thinks he's failed. And he just thought the cast was just another one of his failures. And it was like the failure that was going to break him. So I really liked that he actually was like, no, you didn't fail. This isn't on you. This is on me. It's not, you know. And he told
it
him.
It was the equivalent of the Robin Williams scene in Good Will Hunting. It's not your fault.
So it was a really good scene. It looks like they've healed their friendship, and right on cue, Cass is now going to betray them against his will. So they finally get back to being friends and get back to where I like them. And then he gets whisked off to be talked at by Amanda Tapping, who plays a angel named Naomi.
That was Amanda Tapping.
Executive angel lady, yeah.
And so now I don't know what her agenda is. I don't know what she wants. I have no idea. I don't know if she's... What's weird is because it's Amanda Tapping, I want to like her. But I'm like, is she a good guy? Is she a bad guy?
Is she a good angel or a bad angel?
Yeah, it's like you have no idea. And
it could go either way on this.
Yeah, and that's what's cool about it. And now I'm intrigued. I want to know.
I thought the one narrative weakness in this episode was, come on, Tron family. Can you not tell that the witch you find in the Yellow Pages might not be best?
No, not even the Yellow, the Craigslist.
Craigslist, sorry.
Yeah.
Craigslist. Because if you didn't know that she was totally going to give them up, smack yourself.
Right. Yeah, that was pretty bad.
What can I say? I'm a curio. It's like, no, you're a bad actor.
But I did... I thought that Crowley was sufficiently evil. This
he
movie.
Always is.
Yeah, well, sometimes he's funny.
Was it Skip the angel he was torturing?
It was the...
what's his name?
It's Samuel.
No, the one who has, like, the funny name. Like,
yeah, he has a really Skip long name. I forgot, but... You know,
the hot dog vendor angel dude.
Yeah, I was like, dude...
I do like that the people he abducted thought that they were on a spaceship with an alien.
I mean, what are you going to think? You're in one place, and then all of a sudden you're transported somewhere else? Of course you're going to think you're on a spaceship.
Yeah, you're not going to think demons. You're going to think aliens.
And I thought it was hilarious that he just lost his patience with them. He was like, how stupid are you guys? Like, do you not know what's happening right now?
They are pretty stupid.
Yeah, and I like the little kid, even though he didn't have any lines. I was like, oh, he's so cute. the whole Cass scene where he's watching television, and I was like, oh, yeah, I remember Cass likes to watch TV. Like, all of that was just, it just made me happy.
Television.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of that stuff just made me smile, made me happy. And, oh, super duper juiced up Cass when he shows
that was
his
cool.
Oh,
what does that mean
with the glowing blue eyes?
Yeah, what the heck? Like
super angel powers activate.
Well, what I figure is Naomi is giving him extra juice when he needs it. That's the only thing I can figure out.
Works
because
for me.
Because for he shouldn't be that strong.
No.
So yeah, awesome. I'm totally, especially since Cass seems like he's back for a little while. And he's actually going to travel with them. Yeah. I'm on board. I'm like, thank you. You have saved this show from mediocrity.
I don't know what I think about there being like, you know, more tablets made by Metatron. It's like, is that what we're going to do for the rest of the season? Is hunt for Metatron's tablets?
Well, we don't know how many there are. I'm figuring there's going to be one that's named Angel. So that's what I think. I think that might be what Naomi is looking for.
It seems reasonable there'd be a demon tablet, an angel tablet, and a human tablet.
Yes. Well, we knew there was a Leviathan one. So what we don't have is a human one, and we don't have an angel one. So I'm not thinking there's like 12. I'm figuring there's just like...
a handful.
Yes. Very small number. And where did Metatron go? Why did he stop writing? Like, why did he write his little soliloquy at the end? Like, that was kind of interesting. So, anyway. I am actually really excited about Supernatural since probably the beginning of this season. Like, I thought the premiere was really good.
And then
their standalones have been very sketchy. But my thing is I can deal with a standalone as long as Cass is in it. Like, I'm okay. So, and next week's episode, two weeks episode looks pretty funny. So, yay! All right, next up, let's talk about Arrow.
I thought it was a good episode. They brought in the Royal Flush Gang, which is DC Comics villains. Kind of a new twist on them. And I like the fact that they're taking the... I mean, the whole aesthetic of the show is very Nolan-influenced that, okay, they're not superheroes and supervillains per se. They have the traits of these characters from the comics. We're going to try to see how would that play out in the real world.
Right.
Yeah, everything is very grounded in reality.
Yeah, but it's pretty cool. I like that Diggs got to be the one that said, you know what, we need to take this case. And he said, no, we have to be on our revenge thing. And Diggs was like, no.
You gotta go beyond that.
Yeah, we're taking this case. And he's like, I have to remind you, I am not the sidekick. And he really established that this week. So I thought that was good. Yeah. And I like them training and all of that. So I it feels like the story's advancing.
Oh, no, they're advancing the plot. And I think you said that a certain NBC show I loathe does a good job with flashbacks. I would say Arrow is kind of the template. I'm equally invested in the flashbacks of Arrow right. and how they're going together to tell a story.
Right.
That,
except we didn't get one this week.
Yeah, we did.
What did we get?
We got him seeing basically the...
didn't count it because it was... delirious. I didn't count that because it seemed like it was all in his head.
It is in his head.
I know, so I just... That's why I erased it, because it didn't advance the actual what the heck is going on the island story.
But it did show, you know, where the list came from.
That's true.
Which is kind of important.
Yeah, because I always wondered, like, I was like, how did he get the list if the book was blank?
And I was surprised they paid the money to get Jamie Sheridan back, because it's funny... You know, he's not cheap.
Oh, that's the dad?
That plays the dad. Oh, he plays Vice President Walden on Homeland.
Oh, right. That's why I know.
Because you can tell in some episodes they didn't negotiate for him because you don't see his face. But...
Right.
Well, he clearly had time off the campaign trail.
Yes, he did.
So, this week we didn't get any more Barrowman, boo.
Of who?
Barrowman.
Oh, you know he'll be back.
Oh, I know. But we just didn't get him this week, so I said boo. But you said you had a question about the mom, her motivation?
Yeah, I don't know, because at least at the beginning of the series, we are led to believe that she's a bad girl, that she's just evil.
I don't think she is.
And now it's looking like maybe she's not.
I don't think she is. I think she's doing what she can to protect her family in a situation that she's gotten into and realize she's screwed, you know?
Because it looks
like she's being blackmailed into a lot of what she's doing.
And it looks like Barrowman or one of those associates in the triad is the one who killed the
husband.
The dad.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. So
it'll be interesting.
All right. Thumbs up for Arrow. Next up, let's talk about Modern Family. And this week's episode was the definition of a situation comedy, where I was just like, wow, this is totally a sitcom, which I'm talking about Phil and Matthew Broderick.
That was so
over the top.
Didn't they do that once before?
Not to this extent, no.
It just felt...
It feels familiar, like you've seen this before.
Yeah, it did feel very...
The only thing that saved that entire storyline, because I was like so kind of annoyed with it.
The
performances were good, but also at the very end when Matthew Broderick kisses him, his entire reaction was, huh. Like, I thought that was great, because they could have had him react over the top, they could have had him do all kinds of things, and his reaction was just, huh. And then he goes, oh.
But
it's like he puts everything that's happened the whole evening, kind of puts together in his mind, and he's like, oh, that explains that. And then he just goes about his business and he doesn't think about it again.
I think my favorite plot line, though, this is a subplot, was Manny and Luke crashing the bar mitzvahs.
Oh, looking for his girl.
Looking for the dream girl.
Yeah. Manny has a dream girl every other week.
And Manny telling Luke that he miles the fact that he's a little evil genius and with all these schemes.
He's like, thank you for the compliment.
And initially it's like, I'm not interested. And it's like, three bar mitzvahs. Now you've got my interest.
That was all pretty good. Like, and then
the thing with Claire and Alex, I thought,
yeah, it was okay. And I mean, it's not like that wasn't a surprise.
Nah,
it was very obvious. So yeah.
The only thing that was surprise. I mean, I knew the answer to that, and I was just wondering, did Alex do that on purpose?
I got the feeling she did.
Or I think it would have been more convincing if they had let her progress a little bit further and then she flubbed something obvious. I don't know. I quibble.
But yeah. I think she felt the pressure and just didn't want to do it anymore. But it was still a good episode. It was not their best episode.
No.
So, kind of slimy.
And the whole thing with Jay and Gloria and Cam and the painting in the nursery, I'm like...
No, but you have to admit, having Jay hug a bunny was pretty funny.
That was funny.
That was funny.
That was funny.
And I liked...
And the conjunctivitis joke was also kind of good.
I liked how Mitchell was like, I'm not going to fall for it. I'm not going to fall for it. I'm not going to ask. I'm not going to fall for it because he's going to say this. And he had like all the list of things his dad was going to say. He's like, not going to do it. And then he does it. And he's like, I am Charlie Brown. Like, Charlie Brown in the football. That was pretty good. All right, so next up, let's talk about Big Bang. And just as an aside, if you have not seen the Big Bang Theory's Flash Mob, go find it, watch it. It is hilarious.
And awesome.
So talking about the episode this week, the whole thing was the guys were obsessed with finding out what Sheldon was doing, and what the
at 2:45 every day.
Right, so they had to find it. They were obsessed, and they finally find his lair, and then the number 43 is up there, and they're like, "What does it mean? What does this mean?" And I have to say that video that he sent through their feed actually tricked me for a second. I was like, he made a wormhole?
They weren't going to go there.
But that would have been awesome.
That would have been.
I was like, oh my God, he made a wormhole? And he's like, this is like 43 times different dimension. Let's see if how close it is to our reality. And he sticks his head in the wormhole. And he's like, hmm. And then, he had that little bug thing that gets on his face. Like, that was hilarious. And they had me going for a minute. They did.
I thought what was kind of interesting about this episode is they didn't have Amy or
Bernadette
in it. So it was kind of like an old school episode. But I still kind of missed the extra women.
Although I did because I'm tired of Bernadette and Howard dealing with him moving out or not moving out.
I'm over it. They resolved that.
But I did like that Penny and Leonard's conversation. I didn't like his jealousy. I understand why he is so insecure about it.
He should be insecure.
I understand why he is. But I just thought that it was kind of annoying. But I understood. I got it. But then they actually
had
that
fight. Did you notice Gary from, from Alphas was the study buddy slash...
Yeah, it was like, yes, he's got the British accent. He's got you, man. But I did like the, when she actually accidentally admitted she was in love with him. I thought that was fantastic.
I thought that was good. It was kind of reminiscent of Monica and Chandler on Friends.
I didn't watch that show. Sorry. But I liked it because right after she said it, I went, that's the first time she's ever said that. And he goes, that's the first time you've ever said that.
And she's like, let's not talk about this again because I'm going to cry and then you're going to grow up.
And then he started crying. I thought that was great.
I'll be interested to see if they can make this work in the context of the show. Because,
I think it's interesting that now he's got an admirer that he's just totally unaware of.
Oh my gosh, that was brilliant.
Yeah, he just like totally doesn't
smiley face, smiley face.
He's like, oh, she's a friendly girl. He does not get it. So,
we've seen her before, but she's Sheldon's assistant.
Yes,
because Amy was potentially jealous of her,
right?
When they first interviewed,
and then they that was when Penny found it. They were like, "Oh, Penny, you're the one that needs to be jealous," and she was like, "Oh," so that actually made her want Leonard more.
Of course,
that's the psychological thing. But anyway, thumbs up for Big Bang. I liked it.
Yes, good episode.
Next up, let's talk about Person of Interest, Allison.
I thought it was a great episode. They've been doing that recently. It's like there's nothing I can complain about particularly. It's funny because I didn't start out as a huge fan of the show, but now they're just doing consistently really strong episodes.
I have to agree. Well, I like the return of what is
Asian dude from Lost?
Yeah, thank you.
Other Asian dude from Lost.
I was surprised to see him actually. Apparently, he's going to be semi-recurrent.
I like that. I like the fact that his number, like, another number is up, and they're like again. And then they see who it is.
I love that though. When he's talking to him, and then comes out the glass window.
It's like, of course it's him. He was like, and I like how Reese was trying to be polite to the gangsters. I was like, I know this guy sucks, but can I convince you not to kill him right now? Not while I'm standing here. So that was all pretty, he's great. And I know he messed with Finch's computers because he's like, restrain yourself from messing with my computers. He's like, of course.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure Finch has cameras in there though.
Tell him what he did, or at least a program to see the
keystrokes.
The keystrokes, right.
What I want to know is what's going on with Snow, because that was basically...
Oh, he planted that card to get Carter to show up so that he could meet with her. That was all part of the plan.
Right.
And then basically to have Carter give the message to John.
Yeah, but be more specific with the message, dude. Don't just... Like, she's coming.
I think he was as specific as he could get, and John, I think... fully understands. I mean, they may not know what it is specifically that's being planned, but he knows exactly who is behind what's going on.
That's true, he does. But I just thought that, I'm like, if you're going to send a message, you have 5 seconds to send a message before somebody tries to blow you up. Be specific as possible. That's all. But, yeah, I like the conversation John has with Carter. Because she's like,
at the very end.
At the end, because she's like,
that was great.
Yeah, he's like,
your
son's alive. Yeah.
You're alive.
Let's keep it that way.
How much do you really want to know?
How much do you really want to know?
Yeah, that was good. That was good. He's like, think about me and Finch. We have lost everybody in our lives. Do you really want to be us? And she's like, yeah, keep your secret. It's okay.
Check, please.
That was good. And Fosco being a good cop makes me happy. I don't like him being working for HR. I really like him. That is such a weird thing about the show.
Interesting how they've got all these plot threads, because there's so many different arc stories, and I still think that at least a couple of them are going to converge somehow.
Right, because now we have a new enemy. Because I was like thinking,
a new enemy evidently who is an old enemy.
Yeah, so I was kind of like, oh crap, because we've got Root, we've got this guy, we've got Elias. So we got three major bad guys that want them dead or
and whatever
something.
His former
exactly.
Partner
what
is
I
up
liked
to.
About Julian Sands' character too is that since he's MI5, he is really the equivalent of Reese.
Absolutely,
you know, he's finally got a villain that is absolutely on a level with him.
And, well, apparently he doesn't do hand to hand though. He's like, I don't do that.
I've got people for that.
Yeah, he's like,
I've got people.
But I think he's intrigued. What I also think is great is both Elias and this guy. They don't necessarily want to kill Reese. They want to recruit him. They're like, you're awesome. Can I have you on my team? And so I like the fact that, because I was like, man, what are they doing? They got all these enemies now. But then I thought about it. I was like, they're also accruing a lot
some
of allies.
Because
they've got Zoe. And then now they've got this guy that I still don't got to remember his name now. The new computer
guy.
I want to
say Miles, but that was his last name.
Yeah. So they've got two new, though I don't know how dependable he is. And of course now they have Bear.
That was
great. He's like, put me on speakerphone. And he puts him on speakerphone and he gives the order to Bear. And then Bear goes off and does whatever. And I was like, he was like multilingual now. Nice.
Bear's always been multilingual.
Well, no, I know. But the guy's reaction, because he was like, okay. Because Bear was basically just following him around at attention and on duty and was just doing his job. And then he's like, oh, you can relax. He's like, okay. I love that dog. All right.
That's awesome.
So thumbs up for Person of Interest. Really,
yes.
They've really done a good job with adding humor and more arcs and just... The show's been fantastic. All right.
It has.
Next up, let's talk about Vampire Diaries.
Ooh.
And this week's episode was basically Elena having a lot of hallucinations because she kills the Slayer, and so all her hallucinations are trying to get her to kill herself. But they're all in
her... It's a curse.
Right. But the thing that's weird is all the information is from her subconscious, but I kind of felt like the hunter guy was kind of... Like it was his ghost or something? Because some of the stuff he said didn't feel like her subconscious. That's all.
It could have been his... I mean, it could have been his ghost because it's a curse. I mean...
Yeah, that's true. It was pretty good, though, because we got Catherine back, even though it was in her head.
I want to see the real Catherine with
I want to find out.
Hey, girl. I hear we have something coming. Let me teach you a few things.
I don't think Catherine will be happy that Elena's a vampire. I don't think she's going to be happy at all.
Why not?
Because the whole advantage she had was she's immortal. She could wait out Elena taking her boyfriends. She just had to wait for her to die, and, you know, she'd be patient. But now, if she's immortal too, and they look exactly alike...
So
no.
Catherine can have Stefan, Elena can have Damon, and all of us are happy.
Except that Stefan claims he doesn't like Catherine.
Yeah, well, whatever.
But yeah, that is the perfect solution.
I think it's really interesting that Stefan is coming to realize that Elena is more connected to, you know, Vamp Elena is much more connected to Stefan.
Because he's not...
I mean, to Damon than he is.
Because Damon is not all judgy. Damon does not judge her the way that Stefan does. Because Stefan wants her to be just like him. He wants her to only eat animals, not kill anybody, be on his diet, do everything the way he does, be super controlled like him. And if she's not, that he's very disappointed in her. And how it's hard, it's hard for her with this transition in the first place, let alone dealing with him judging her all the time.
I like the budding, whatever you want to call it. It's not a bromance yet, but I like that Damon's starting to, okay, maybe Matt is not completely worthless.
Oh, because he is looking for a new drinking buddy. Because
he's looking for a new drinking buddy.
That's true.
But
Alaric is gone. Aww.
They said that anytime that he wants to come back, he's welcome too. Because that scene at the cemetery.
That broke my heart.
That was awesome.
I literally was crying. I was like, that broke my heart. But I like... That's so ironic considering how the relationship started. But, Damon does totally need a new guy to hang out with.
And I think it's also interesting that Damon is still trying to do the right thing by Elena.
Yes.
And keep her in the loop. And the thing, Stefan is... I'm sorry. The reason I like Elena as my favorite of the vampire heroines, she seems to be most like Mina Harker from Dracula, which is the granddaddy of all the vamp craze that's going on. But she's not depending on some dude to always save her.
Right.
Whereas, I don't care how much money they make at the box office, those insipid Twilight movies, I want to smack her because, oh, save me, save me.
Yeah, Elena basically is like this. If you keep a secret from her, keep her out of the loop, she will do her own thing.
I'm going to do my own thing. And if you don't like it, tough, because you shouldn't have told, kept me in the loop.
Yeah.
I'm not your play toy or your,
She's not to be protected. And the fact that Stefan lied to her over and over again trying to protect her does not earn him points at all.
Not at all.
So, yeah, she's like, and moving on to Damon. I'm like, yay!
So what is this dude? Okay, this teacher dude. Obviously, he's not a witch himself.
No. He remember that story he told about Solias?
So you think he's the dude?
He is Solias. I'm pretty sure. Because somebody tried to say, well, the witch woman was stronger than him. And she was like, no, he was. No, she wasn't. I was, and he almost said I was stronger. Like, he was really quick to correct. He's totally an immortal who doesn't have any... Because his powers got stripped away. So I think that's because when he's talking to Bonnie, he tells her, I've been around the world more times than you can imagine. I'm like, how old are you? Like 30? Like, how could you have been around the world that many times? So he's definitely Solias. I'm pretty sure. Okay, I will make a quarter bet on that.
A quarter bet.
I am really happy with where Vampire Diaries is going right now. My only fear is to keep the triangle going that they feel like they have to turn Elena human again. Like, that will annoy the crap out of me. So
I'm wondering about this the secondary triangle that seems coming back in play.
Oh, Tyler,
with
Klaus.
With Tyler, Klaus, and Caroline.
I personally kind of like Klaus and Caroline.
Me too.
I
something about Tyler and Caroline. Boring.
Yeah.
It's too boring. It's too safe. Whereas,
I liked Caroline and Matt when they were together.
But I like Caroline with Tyler possessed by Klaus.
Yeah, and I like the fact that that Klaus managed to get a date out of it. He's like, you keep using me. I want a date out of this. It's like, nicely done, Klaus.
Well played. And I'm not sure what they're doing with the former witch from Secret Circle, who's, I guess, now a werewolf. But
to make us not care that Caroline is now going to be with Klaus, they now have the backup girlfriend for
backup
Tyler.
Backup girlfriend.
So I'm like, all right, Tyler, get with the wolf. Yeah, get with the wolf, fine, and Caroline can move on to Klaus. That will be the only way I can deal with Klaus still being on the show, because other than that, Klaus needs to be gone.
But when they made him a lead, that secured his position at least for a couple
of years. I find
him
boring on the show as a villain now, because he's been a villain for over a season at this point.
Oh, well over a season.
So my thing is, I have a time limit. If you're going to be the big bad, you get one season to be the big bad, and then you have to move on.
But he's not the big bad now.
Now
he's kind of like in it with them.
Sort of. Kind of. Maybe.
Who knows?
Anyway, let's wrap that up. Thumbs up. Next up, let's talk about Last Resort for one of the last times.
Well, to their credit, ABC has said that they plan to air all 13 episodes. So
yeah. That gives them no credit for me. I'm sad. Because this episode was really good, and Andre Brower rocked my socks. And I really started to like Robert Patrick this episode, and now they're going to turn him into not a turncoat per se, but basically a drug addict who is not going to be helpful anymore. I'm like, just when they got his character to where I liked him. Because before, in the beginning, he was a jerk.
He was the obstacle.
He was the obstacle jerk that I didn't like. And finally, they got him past that to where he's just the cop. And I'm like, I like him as the cop. And I like him looking out after his men. He's great. And then now they burned off the soles of his feet. So I'm like, no. So apparently now they can turn into a drooling drug addict that will now work for the bad guy. And I'm like, oh, that's a bad idea.
Well, at some point they're going to have to find him. Somebody from Colorado is going to have to find him. And
well, him crawling around. Yeah. Well, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about eventually. The whole point is he's going to heal up, but he's going to be hooked on the drugs. And so now he's going to have to work for the bad guy to get the drugs. So that's where I see this. That's why he did it.
I hope that's not what they're going.
But that's why he did it. He wanted him to be hooked on the drugs.
I think What's-His-Face is not the smartest bad guy ever, whatever.
Oh, he's not. He's
putting
not.
It mildly, no.
It's like, dude, keep your shirt buttoned.
That's not happening, apparently.
And get some orthodontia.
I think he's actually one of the weakest things about this show.
Oh, he is. Oh, he is by far. And I think it is a casting problem.
Yeah.
I just don't think he's a good actor.
He's not.
If you had, like, somebody who was magnetic and strong. Oh. Like anybody from The Wire.
Well, I was actually going to say
Omar
Echo.
From The Wire.
I was going to say Echo.
Or Mr. Adewale.
Yeah, he would have been awesome as that character.
But this guy, he just looks like he could, you know, just...
And he could have kept his shirt unbuttoned, too. He would have been fine with a shirt unbuttoned. But anyway. That's the thing, this downfall. But there was an interesting thing about morale this episode, because Andre Brower was so focused on what he was trying to do.
On smoking at the traitor.
Yeah, and that he wasn't paying attention to what he was doing to the crew. And that's what the XO, that's his job, and he was doing his job. So I thought that was all pretty good. I don't understand why.
Which is interesting, because usually on a ship it's reverse. Usually the XO is the hard ass.
Right. He's the bad guy.
He's the bad. They usually, it's good cop. The XO is bad cop, so the CO can be good cop.
Right.
And because one of the things that's kind of cool is there's still that question floating in the background, has Brower lost it?
Yeah.
Because every time you think that, no, he's not. Something's going on there.
Yeah, but that's what makes him dangerous.
There's clearly a larger conspiracy, so you know that, you know, he didn't just lose his mind.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's got this dangerous vibe to him. Where when they're describing him as a megalomaniac, I'm like, yeah, he pretty much is.
Yeah.
Pretty well, much he said at the very beginning, you know, he wants to be just crazy enough that they take him seriously.
Right, but that he's kind of like that with just in private too. So you know, it's not just all the image that he's giving. It's what he's just doing every day.
I'm just wondering, is Sam really willing? Would he betray Marcus to ally himself with this other quote-unquote resistance against the corrupt president?
Well, the only problem with that is there's no way that he can bring his wife, shows up on the island, and everybody else's family doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a problem.
Yeah, it would.
So,
I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, he can't pull that off. That you can't do that.
So how about the reveal that...
The least surprising reveal in history?
Is it Sanchez?
It's Cortez.
Cortez.
Yeah, I kind of figured that.
Well, I actually was liking her, and I felt bad for her for making the play on the captain, and then it got
rebuffed. Why'd you feel bad for her?
Because I felt like unrequited. I'm a sucker for the unrequited stuff.
Oh.
So I was like,
oh. There's no freaking way that a petty officer, third class, I think she is, or whatever,
was going to make with the... I understood
with the
that.
Captain of the... Oh, that was such a no-no.
Oh, I know that. I knew he wasn't going to do it.
Oh, I knew too.
I knew that, but I still felt... I was like, oh, unrequited. I always feel bad for that.
And I think it was just a ploy anyway to keep him...
Oh, now that I know she's a traitor, of course it was just a ploy.
Well, she spent the entire episode talking about how loyal she is, which just made me suspicious right off the bat. So,
oh, that's right.
I mean, she spent all that time talking about what her dad did to the dog that bit her and the rest of the thing. And I'm thinking, oh, you are so the spy. you're the turncoat right there.
I think it might have been cool if Grace had been the spy.
But I think it's too obvious.
For Grace to have been the spy?
Yeah, because they already suspected her. They don't suspect Cortez at all.
I was talking to Libya before the podcast. I think this is why she had to make sure she survived when the three were taken hostage and they were going to kill one.
Yeah, and then
so when Josh, I forget the character's last name, but first name Josh. When Josh volunteers, take him. She was all too willing to go with it to make sure that
she survived it. She had a bigger mission.
Yep.
So she's not a particularly good CIA spy as far as hand to hand. Apparently, she keeps getting captured and crap. So
unless that's part of the plan.
All right. So thumbs up.
Oh, and the stuff with Christine. You know, the two lame subplots coming together and throwing the monkey wrench in the plans. And now we find out that Sam's good friend, who's trying to make a pass at Christine,
is under duress.
Is under duress. So.
Oh, that was a little much for me. In fact, that was a lot much for me.
Yeah, I don't care about that at all.
I have to admit, you know, I really enjoy this show. I do, but they have a tendency to get a little over soap opera-y. A lot of places.
Soapery.
All right, next up, let's talk about Grimm. And this was their fall finale episode. And I have to say, I was Renard pulling in Nick to ask him about Juliet and
that
how she's
doing. That was kind of ballsy.
That was like, I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, he's going to find out. And when he finds out, he's going to remember this conversation. And you're a jerk right now. Like, that was crazy. Why would you do? I would have avoided him.
Aside from the attack on Hank, not a whole lot happened this episode until the very end.
Right.
When the dots are finally.
Well, and
when
Juliet,
the eyes are dotted and the T's are crossed.
Juliet actually annoyed me this week.
Oh, she always annoyed
me. No, usually she doesn't. But this week, when she's giving out all that information to this woman whose cat scratched her and they're all best friends, and she's like, why are you... She never once goes, why are you asking me all these questions? Like, it never occurs to her to ask, why do you want to know all this information? It's bizarre. For her to just come out of town, to show up, ask her to coffee, and then just
Hey, girl, I know my cat scratched you and you could have died, but tell me everything that's been going on and your ex-boyfriend's secrets.
Yes.
Go.
Like, what? And then when the cops all show up and arrest her, she doesn't go, oh, that's weird. She was asking me all these questions about you. She goes, oh my God, how could you just arrest her? Stop being so mean. Like, what is wrong with you?
It's...
That bothered me more than anything else. But, on the other hand, I did like that Renard figured out where the camper was, and then... Well, except that I'm pretty sure... Nick took the key, didn't he?
I hope so.
Because
He took something, and I hope it was the key.
No, because he did the whole thing. He got the secret compartment. Right. He looked at the key, and it looked like he put it in his pocket.
That's what I thought.
So, the key should not be at the trailer. So, that should be fine. Though now he knows that Renard betrayed him, but that doesn't mean that he knows that Renard's a Vessin.
Yeah, but I think he's going to figure out.
Hopefully, that's what he figures
out. Hopefully, Nick is a better detective than the captain, than Renard is as a captain of detectives.
Well, no, he's been doing a really good job keeping that all out of secret.
No, I'm just talking about, you know, not think, hey, I'm having a fling with your girlfriend that you don't know about, but let me get all personal with you and ask about it. That was dumb.
That was.
That was really dumb.
Well, because it's going to come out. He knows it's going to come out. It's just a matter of time. So by doing that, he's actually going to make more of an enemy of Nick, and he doesn't want Nick as his enemy. So I thought that was stupid.
Well, I thought the whole point is he didn't want Nick as his enemy.
Yeah, he doesn't want Nick as his enemy. So that was a stupid thing to do, because now that's going to make Nick his enemy. Yep. He's going to have to do a lot of fast talking to convince Nick not to try to kill him. Once Nick figures out that he's the royal, that's going to be bad. So talk really quickly.
But I must give them props. I almost put it on my Facebook page, but I ended up not doing it. At the very end, when they had "to be continued," they added on a second line, "sorry." And I'm like, okay, that's cool.
I thought that was amusing. It made me laugh.
It made me laugh, too.
I mean, we only have what? Oh, is it 3 weeks? No, we have January, which is January. What show is 3 weeks? Something is only for 3 weeks that we have to wait.
Oh, Fringe, I think we have to wait for 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I remember somebody, like some show
in
said
3 weeks.
Some show said what? 2 weeks. Some show said 3 weeks. And then Grimm is not until January.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right.
In 2013.
The future.
All right, so thumbs up for Grimm. I liked where this was going. And I like Well, it's part one of two, so we really can't judge it completely until we get the second part. All right, next up, let's talk about Fringe.
Oh, those Bishop boys.
Yes, they're both... It's crazy that Walter is going on soliloquing about the man that he was and how ambitious and how evil he was because all he cared about was this and this and this, while we're simultaneously watching
Peter
become that.
Become an observer.
Yes.
And, of course, Peter is who he is expecting to hold him back.
Yeah, Peter's not going to be very useful at all.
I thought it was really interesting that how Josh Jackson is starting to incorporate some of the tics that the observers
have into
his performance.
Yes, he did a really beautiful job.
I would say of all the Dawson's Creek lot, of most of the Dawson's Creek lot, Michelle Williams being the notable obsession.
apparently your
exception. Exception. That he's done the best in terms of, I think he was probably never really fully used to his potential on the Creek, and I think that this has been a good show for him, the stretch and show. He's got some chops.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a great episode as far as his acting was concerned. I mean, it was really all Peter from the very beginning of the episode. You can see just those tiny little observer head motions creep into his move, and by the end of the episode, of course, he's pretty much full observer mode.
Yeah.
Which is really, really creepy.
Well, what was a trip was him trying to pretend to be normal was getting to be really hard
for him. Yeah.
And it was telling because Olivia knew that there was something wrong.
Right.
Because he wasn't pulling it off. And then when she catches him, he's just like, screw it, I'm not even going to try. And he just acts like an observer. Mm-hmm. And she is freaked out. It's like, I will slowly back out of the room now. not any quick motions. I will slowly step back so you don't even notice me. And because then he teleported.
Check, please.
Yeah, he teleported from one of the boards he was writing on to the other board. And she was like, yeah, I got to go.
Yeah, this ain't working.
Excuse me, got to do my hair.
So that was.
Is that the tea kettle right here? Astrid.
That was really good. And I liked all the elements that we knew about William Bell. Like, we didn't see William Bell, but it felt like he was there. Like, all the stories they were telling about him, and that, you know, his relationship
he did have a hand in the episode.
Oh, that was bad. that was bad.
You're so punny.
That was so bad.
I mean,
I'm sorry.
And a trick with using Bell, especially after Nimoy's self-imposed retirement,
right,
has been, how do we make his presence known when he's so crucial to plot,
right,
when the actor doesn't want to be in the episode?
But the thing is, he's a huge fan of the show.
Oh, no. But he basically has claimed that he's in retirement.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of broke it once to do, I think, that one fourth season episode he did.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had to animate him for part of an episode before that. They had to have her be possessed by him for part of an episode.
I know, but this one was really good because just him having that picture of Nina lets you know how Bell actually felt about her. And it was really good.
Walter tells Nina
he never loved you.
Oh, that was so wrong. That was so wrong. And I'm glad he did repent of
that. His eyes almost glowed when he did that.
I was like, this is evil, Walter. Yes.
But it's interesting how he is afraid of becoming basically who he would have been.
Right.
And expecting Peter to stop that. And meanwhile, there's nobody to prevent Peter from...
Well, that's because nobody knows what's going on. And
Olivia
has some clue now, yeah.
Yeah, it's getting close to being too late. The preview showed Walter saying, we have to get it out before it becomes permanent. So there is time to pull that thing out before it becomes permanent.
Yeah, because I guess if it's permanent and you take it out, then
you die.
Dies.
However, it looks like he has epic fight with Windmark.
Windmark.
Yeah, Walmart. Walmart.
He's not that evil, really.
Yes. But it looks like he has an epic fight with Windmark, and Windmark is like, I have planned this. He's like, I have put everything in plan to be in this place at this time. And I'm just like, oh. Only thing is, I want September to show up.
I was going to say, I want September.
Thinking exactly that at the end of the episode, especially during the preview. I thought, wouldn't this be the time to kind of bring him back?
Yes, please. September. Because him just dying off screen would be very unsatisfactory.
But it's interesting how Peter did this. He did this so he could take Windmark down to avenge at his death.
Right.
And yet, I mean, it's like the old, you know, what does it gain? What does it profit a man that to avenge his daughter's death, he has to lose his own soul?
Right. And he loses his family, too. He's going to lose his father. He's going to lose his wife. He's going to lose everything.
But will he be in a position to try to, I mean, will he be able to attempt to regain or retain some of his humanity?
Well, that's, I don't know. That's the question. Yeah, we have no idea.
Yeah. But I have to say, I loved the finale of the episode to Bowie's Man Who Sold the World.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
I could not have found a more that perfect was brilliant. Piece of music.
That was brilliant. And Walter's anger that he stole this from me.
I was in the asylum.
On top of everything else, he took my record collection.
It's like, that's pretty low.
That was awesome. I just, like, I can't wait for the next episode, yet I'm dreading it too, because that means we're one step closer to the end. But I just want the full, I guess I want the whole story all together so I can see it.
I'll be interested to see how everything plays out.
Yeah. All right, so thumbs up.
Big thumbs up.
Big thumbs up. All right, so that's it for this week. If you have any feedback, send to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Facebook. You can listen to us on getthepointradio.com, Krypton Radio, Weenopolis, and iTunes. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Goodbye. Bye.